Welcome back. I see many, but not all of us came back for this one. The web students are out there. How you doing, Webbies? Good to see you. Glad you came back too. Lecture 2, August 23rd. If you are using lecture notes, as is highly recommended that you do, we're on page 20 of the lecture notes. And we're doing ring-a-dings. What is that about? We're on the housekeeping slides. And so clarification about the books. I know it's a little goofy, so let me clarify some things. Right now, if you go into the Barnes & Noble, Kent State University campus bookstore, you see Principle of Marketing Course Notes. That's this. That is the lecture notes. $33 or whatever they're getting for it, or downloadable from the website for free, but then you got to print it, so not so free. Okay, that's the lecture notes. Lecture notes are things that follow my lectures, saving the issue of trying to write down long stuff, leaving blanks, and has pictures and stuff. How many people have lecture notes, know what I'm talking about? Okay, so a bunch of us, all right? It's useful for the open book, open notes tests, okay? The other thing, though, is the actual book, the 16th edition of Marketing by Karen and other authors. They sell it to you at a greatly reduced price. The loose leaf book is like $33. Way less than you could get it anywhere else for the 16th edition. But they only do that because you're enrolled in Flashbooks and are paying them $87 for the electronic access and haven't dropped out. What they don't want to have happen is you go buy the $33 book and then drop out of Flashbooks because then you've ripped them off. So what they insist on doing, despite my discussions about other ways of doing it, they're not going to open up that book online in their store until a day or so after the opt-out date for Flashbooks passes. That's Sunday the 27th. So if you don't opt out of Flashbooks the 28th or maybe the 29th, you should be able to get that book for $33 in the bookstore. Yeah? So that's where it's a little confusing. If you are asking, well, how am I going to take the test right away, right now, because it's opening Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, well, if you don't opt out of Flashbooks, you have access to the ebook. You can use that for the mini tests. Can't use it for the midterms and the final. Still confusing, or did that make any sense at all, or was I just babbling? Any questions on this access to the different kinds of material? If you have the question, somebody else does, so feel free to ask it. Does that make sort of sense-ish? And Matt, did that make sense to you? Okay, thank you, Matt. All right, so the first of the mini tests will open tomorrow at 8 a.m. with any luck, if everything goes well tonight for me, and I'll send you email letting you know it's open, and it will close on Sunday, so it's open Thursday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. The idea is, y'all, if you work on stuff right away, you can get it done. Web students, they only plan to do things on the weekend because they work during the week. They can get it done. Seems like it's fair and equitable to everybody. So, opens then, closes 11:59 on Sunday. It'll cover wherever we get to today. Lecture 1, Lecture 2, wherever we get to. Including, for the mini tests, business in the news, marketing in the news, those are also testable. Still at about 556 students overall. This is old information. I'm just going to leave it up for, you know, a couple weeks, whatever. Here comes the stuff. Business in the news, marketing in the news is testable. You want to take notes. Also, this stuff is posted on the Canvas website in the learning materials module. So if you miss it today or you don't take a smartphone picture of it, whatever, you can still get to it later. So how many guys have used Uber Eats? Well, a fair number. And I assume what you've used it. What do you use it for? What do you get with it?
Depends on what I'm feeling like I want to eat.
But you don't get a bicycle. What do you get? You get food from like a takeout place, yeah? Naturally, that's what they're known for. They want to change that image, and they're starting in the UK. Uber Eats ads are all about indulgence as it pushes grocery delivery. Much like Kleenex is used as a catch-all word for tissues, or Google is used as the generic term for online search, Uber has become synonymous with ride-hailing. Now the brand wants to create the same association with grocery delivery. So they're building their brand image. They're repositioning the brand a little bit away from just restaurant or takeout. The company's food delivery services, Uber Eats, is typically linked with ordering meals from restaurants, but it has been expanding into the grocery business. Its latest ads for the United Kingdom market highlight the ease of getting anything from booze to desserts to eggs delivered to your door through Uber Eats. So we're seeing a little bit about global marketing. We know them here, but they're a global company. And we're seeing a little bit about growing the brand with this other approach. One commercial depicts a man at home on a hot day craving the cool relief of an ice cream. After Uber Eats delivers his treat, he waits until the scoop of ice cream reaches the perfect drippy consistency before he takes his first bite. Let's see if we can pull that ad up real quick.
Just got from internet, I just don't seem to understand why you're so very hard to take. You sweet sticky thing, if I could swallow you down sometime, I'd like to try and change your mind. You really got the one to blame, you sweet sticky thing.
So we're getting our groceries with Uber Eats in the UK, and the ads all share a similar tone. You can see it's a little bit of humor. I mean, you aren't laughing out loud, but it's sort of humorous. And they're using a leisurely vibe that focuses on the quiet, offbeat moments of pleasure in the characters' lives that you can get with Uber Eats. Perhaps not your main thought when you think about Uber Eats. They're repositioning that brand. Earlier this month, Uber Eats launched billboards and social media ads that replaced the second word in the brand's name with examples of what the service can deliver. So instead of Uber Eats, we got Uber Bread, Uber Gin. So there's some billboards up there in the UK. Those things are called out of home. That's a term we use, out of home. Ads, and also then the importance of social media and marketing. Uber Eats tasked us, the ad agency, to tell people we're not just about the takeaways from restaurants. We deliver so much more than that, starting with groceries. We wanted to bring this to life in our new, increasingly distinctive brand tone, built around effortlessness, says the creative director at the ad agency. So we're building the brand message. So, cool. We'll see what happens, and does it come here? Coke. How Coke is using AI to make ads with artists through its Real Magic Creative Academy. How many of you guys have used AI to draw a picture from text? You type in text, it draws a picture. How many people are saying, what are you talking about? So, all right, Coca-Cola, which has leaned into artificial intelligence-enabled marketing more than most marketers, is relying on a diverse group of digital artists and companies focused on tech and fashion to help create ads that will debut in the coming weeks. So we're seeing the use of technology, AI, in marketing, and we're seeing partnerships with these other folks and marketing. The work will be informed by the Real Magic Company Creative Academy, a three-day event held last week. The event included 30 creators who were selected earlier this year when Coke opened a digital sandbox, allowing them to create Coke-related art using DALL-E and GPT-4, the latest version of ChatGPT. Technology companies NVIDIA and Bain and Company also participated. Creative sessions took place with the fashion brands A Bathing Ape. How many of you guys know A Bathing Ape? More than new in my office, thank you. And High Snobbity? How many of you guys know that one? How do you say it? High Snobbity, thank you. That looks better than what I was saying. I often get words wrong, by the way, so feel free to correct me. High Snobbity. Now, I just for fun told DALL-E, please create an image of a black squirrel drinking a cola on the Kent campus. And just from that text, boom, here we had two black squirrels drinking one a Coke, one a Pepsi, just from my simple command for the demonstration of how easy it is to get stuff out of AI. They do a better job than I do, but there you are. The program underscores Koch's desire to be at the forefront of AI marketing and popular culture while building on its equity in art and collaboration. Work from the Academy will appear in future Coke advertising, so we're keeping the brand fresh and relevant and current, collaborating with the Japanese fashion A Bathing Ape and the fashion and lifestyle brand how'd she say it? High Snobriety. Thank you. High Snobriety. That's what it does say. High Snobriety is helping Coke to stay current. Patrick Thakkar, Senior Director of Generative AI at Coca-Cola, God knew there was such a position. That's where we want to play. We want to stay ahead of the curve. We want to play in pop culture and partner with all these different artists and creators. So work from those briefs are expected to appear as part of Coca-Cola marketing programs in the coming weeks. Stay tuned. We may see a black squirrel running around drinking your Coke. Probably not. That was me, not them. Finally, Hellmann's. How many people have Hellmann's mayonnaise at home? Not that many. Wow, how many people hate mayonnaise? Holy mackerel, well, they have a problem, don't they? Hellmann's gives NFL quarterback Will Levis, it turns out, not Levi's, Levis, you know that? Yeah, I had to learn that one. A lifetime Mayo contract. Will Levis may have fallen short of projections that had him going as high as number 4 in the NFL draft, but the quarterback selected 33rd overall in April by the Tennessee Titans has just won a whole bunch of mayonnaise. So we're seeing celebrities in marketing. Unilever just announced the signing of Levis, who is famous for putting mayonnaise in his coffee. How many people knew that? Well, a few. To a contract worth a lifetime supply of Hellmann's mayonnaise. The deal was announced in a 2-minute mock press conference video. So we're getting attention for the brand. I don't know that we'll see the whole 2 minutes here, but let's see if we can pull up the mock interview. The Mark PR piece, real quickly. I am subscribed. You know, fight with me here, so we aren't going to see it now. Of course, this works from home. Yeah, that's not going to happen. So maybe we won't see it. This worked perfectly from home. Log on, right? Log in. For registered users. All right. It worked at home. I guess it's going to fight me here. Yeah, we aren't going to see it. So what they did was they created a mock interview with the guy in like a PR situation, getting attention for the brand and this new spokesperson for them. Levis, who's currently the third quarterback on the Titans depth chart, was well known before the draft for viral TikTok videos of him putting mayo in his coffee and eating bananas with the skins on. So social media was important in getting attention for him and causing them to pick up him as a spokesperson with a lifetime supply of mayonnaise and probably some money.
And I have been known to put mayonnaise in my coffee sometimes.
Do.
Oh, can you get this?
Maybe we should try that. I don't know.
Oh, that's nasty.
Okay, so, you know, his strange behavior goes viral, gets attention, and here he's a brand spokesperson. So the importance of social media. Hellmann's marketers hope to ride a viral wave that so far has generated 10.5 million views on the short-form video app. The brand will be put paid support behind its own video, as well as feature it in the brand's social accounts. So we're seeing digital marketing and social buzz. We decided, obviously, given his talent, his celebrity, and his love for the condiment, mayonnaise, from Hellmann's, that this would be a fantastic partnership. The social buzz is an opportunity for Hellmann's to reach newer and younger consumers. So we're reaching our target audience with this, we hope. And Hellmann's already shows up in about half of U.S. households. So the goal is more about driving more use, not necessarily awareness. That doesn't mean seriously trying to get people to put Hellmann's in coffee, but we do hope to inspire people to think of using mayonnaise as more than just a regular condiment. So the corporate growth strategy here is what's called market penetration, a term we use in marketing, meaning trying to sell more product to existing consumers. That's an approach. All right, so That's Marketing in the News, testable stuff, and we're on Election News page 20, which is to pick up with chapter 21 in the textbook. And I probably forgot to leave this where we were. So we had ended up last time hearing from one of our video guest speakers, Kosek, and he was talking about the importance of marketing to Time Warner Business Services, which is now Spectrum. And I made the point that he was a frontline manager, and that's the way he views the world. So let's continue with our definition of marketing, yeah? Marketing in general seeks to discover consumers' needs and wants and desires. And having discovered their needs, wants, and desires, marketing tries to satisfy them, give them value. And they do that, or attempt to do that, at a profit, unless, of course, you are a not-for-profit organization. Yeah, they also market. Churches market, the American Cancer Society markets, political party market, not-for-profit entities market, too. So there we would say to satisfy organizational goals through an integrated effort to the firm. Things within the organization have to pull together. You can't be a luxury brand operating out of a roadside stand. I'm exaggerating the difference here, but things have to match up. They all have to pull the same way. Or you just confuse the consumer. What is this thing? So my shorthand for marketing in general is marketing just that. Marketing seeks to discover and satisfy consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit or to serve organizational goals through an integrated effort of the firm. It involves the exchange, which is the trade of things of value between the buyer and the seller, such that each one is better off after the exchange. This is not the most difficult question I'll ever ask you, but in marketing, what is being exchanged? What is the exchange we're talking about typically? What for what? Somebody said something. Okay, so you, the consumer, you're giving up something you value and worked hard for, money, and what are you getting? Goods and services back. If one of those things doesn't happen, we don't really have marketing going on. There's no exchange, okay? So it's the idea of the exchange is something of value between the buyer and seller, so each one is better off after the trade. And today, we deliver this with excellent customer experience. We are in an age of experience. Consumers want more than just the product or the service. They want the experience surrounding it as well. So that's part of what we have to do.
We live in an age where businesses need to look beyond the aesthetics of a product or the practicalities of a service. Where consumer engagement and loyalty count far more than features and benefits alone. Where consumers expect to interact with or even influence suppliers, not just be sold to. Products are no longer enough for today's consumers, who value experience over all else. The age of experience has arrived. The key to success in today's economy lies in delivering consumer experiences that demonstrate true differentiation. But the task is a daunting one at best. What exactly is meant by experience? And how can business influence it and drive consumer connection? The key to making consumer experience the true focus of innovation is to capture insights and expertise from across a business's entire ecosystem. Shaping the right consumer experience requires collaboration between all roles within a company, from marketing and management to sales and engineering. Only by connecting all the dots between people, ideas, and data can a business drive consumer loyalty, engagement, and value. The start of every experience is all about the anticipation and promise of things to come. In the age of experience, businesses need to place consumer experience at the heart of innovation. And that means asking the right questions. And asking the right people. To understand the present and navigate the future.
And this company would be glad to help your organization to learn better about your consumers and to provide them with an outstanding experience. Notice that they said that this only works across the organization, from marketing to sales to engineering to management. An integrated effort of the firm has to be at play to make this work. I also think it's pretty strange that given this is a business-to-business commercial, they're showing a woman going up to some luxury apartment with some sort of guy there, and when they talk about anticipation, she's biting her lip. I'm not too sure what that has to do with marketing to business, but that's the way they approach the problem. So, this Dassault Systems video, their company would help you to get that consumer experience. Technology certainly enhances the consumer experience. The global augmented reality market, AR. Have you guys used AR in interacting with products or menus or shows at all? Yeah, some of us have. No? Yes? Yeah. So there was one example I didn't bother to bring in. It's an example using a wine bottle. You use an AR code on the wine bottle, and depending which wine bottle you have, your phone does an AR experience using the wine bottle, and the character on the wine bottle in your phone starts talking to you about its taste, its flavor, where it's from. It's interacting with you in augmented reality. It's expected to grow from $38.6 billion in 2022 to reach $97.8 billion by 2028. Within the context of marketing, augmented reality allows brands to offer unique and immersive digital experiences to engage consumers in memorable ways. We want you to engage with our brand. We want you to engage with our product, with our solution, with the thing we're providing. Retailers such as ASOS, a British online fashion and cosmetic retailer, jewelry brand Kendra Scott, Shopify, Burberry, IKEA, Gucci with virtual sneakers, and Inca Group, which owns IKEA, have invested in augmented reality, virtual reality, or visual artificial intelligence tools to provide the consumers with an interesting, exciting, unique experience. Here's an example from Zappos. You can do a visual trial. Anybody shop Zappos? Zappos? Yeah, one. Okay, so Zappos, you can do a virtual try-on for shoes using augmented reality to help you visualize how a pair of shoes will look from every angle. You tap the virtual fitting room button below the product image, point the camera at your feet, and you can see how the shoes will look from every angle.
Introducing virtual try-on shoes from Amazon.
These mans, yeah, I got them all shook. I came out to play by the book. Yeah, I make the mans, yeah, I got them all shook. These pigs skeptic on a higher metric. Any spots trying to fit in, got them playing tech.
Try on something cute, or try on something new. Find all the styles you love, all in one place.
These mans, yeah, I got them all shook.
So you buy it online, but you want to see how it looks. You can't. So you look at it in your phone through augmented reality. Every angle, every view, whether you're dancing or standing still, boom! You get to interact with the shoe that you may choose to buy. Seeing and testing a product through augmented reality helps reduce product uncertainty while increasing buyer confidence and sales. Now, counter, because for every example, there's a counterexample. Just this week, I heard some news story talking about shopping online, shopping in the store, and a woman said, when you can find a way to get me to virtually try on and fit a pair of women's jeans, that's when I'll shop for jeans online. Other than that, I got to go into a bricks and mortar store and see how they fit. We aren't going to be quite there yet with virtual reality, but that was her comment on it. So we're trying to get the consumers involved. What sort of things influence us in marketing? Well, obviously, the organization we work for and its mission is going to influence what we do. What are our goals and objectives? Do we care about sustainability? Do we care about diversity? Do we care about innovation? Do we care about artificial intelligence? What do we care about as an organization? What are our goals? Do we want to go global? Do we want to be in the UK? Those things influence marketing. are management and people skills, influence marketing. We want to go with a major online web presence using virtual reality, and but we don't know anybody that does that. We don't have any people in the organization to do that. How are you going to do that then? So that's going to influence marketing. Their resources, small companies versus big companies. We saw last time when we were talking about what Amazon's plan was to create this palm reader. They said, look, any other small company, that's silly. That's a goal or objective. They're never going to make it happen. Because the resources, maybe they can. Society influences what we do over in marketing. As you would imagine, companies and brands have been influenced by the Black Lives Matter movement, sustainability movement, ethnic sensitivity movement. These things influence companies in different ways, depending on their mission, depending on who they feel they serve as consumers. And environmental factors, technology and competition and the economy influence us in marketing as well. We'll get into more of that later. But all these things influence what we do. As marketers, we have to be aware of them. We have to pay attention to them. So here it is sort of in a graphic. What I say is things influencing us in marketing, our society, other organizations, suppliers, customers, management, HR, and the environmental forces impact us. Competition, legal, regulatory, and political factors, economic factors, social factors, technology factors. And who's tracking on that stuff predominantly? Marketers are watching that. And that's what's it mean for our consumers. So you have to be aware of those things. So let's think about ways to satisfy needs. You want a funny birthday card for a friend. Anybody here have friends, by the way? Friends? Some of us do, some of us don't. All right, you want a funny birthday card for a friend. What are some ways that you could get this card for a friend? What's one way you could get it? You could go to a store and buy it. Yay, very good. You're paying attention to what we're doing up here. Yay. Where else could you get a card for a friend other than buying the card? Yo. You can make it yourself, okay? So you could make it yourself. You could steal one. This is not something I am selling you to do. Don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, but you could steal one. Or you could voluntarily offer someone something of value, money, for a card that you buy. The silly examples here make the point that it's only the last one of these that describes an exchange in the sense we're talking about in marketing. You're giving someone something of value, they're giving something of value back. So your friend might love that card you made for them with all the glitter and the false ends, but that's not what we mean by marketing. Buying the card is marketing, okay? There's the idea of exchange in the marketing sense. In order for marketing to occur, we have to have two or more parties, at least the buyer and the seller, right? Involved in a voluntary relationship, at least at the point of sale, each of them with unsatisfied needs. Unsatisfied needs of the marketer, your money. Unsatisfied needs of you, the service or product that you're going to buy. So if we don't have all these things, it's not going to happen. Each party has to have a desire and an ability to engage in an exchange. Can you think of something where someone might have the desire for the exchange, but not the ability for it?
I want to buy Google, I don't have the money.
Want to buy Google, or more realistically, you want to buy a Maserati. I really would like a Maserati, but unfortunately, I don't have the ability. Why not? I don't have that kind of money. Well, then you're not really in the market for it. It's not going to happen, right? And the parties have to be able to communicate. Obviously, the old interweb thingy, you've heard of that, has made this easier to do from anywhere in the world. But if you have a target audience that isn't paying attention to your website, isn't paying attention to your ads on radio, isn't paying attention to your print ads, no sale's going to occur. They don't know about you. People can't buy what they're not aware of. So you have to be able to communicate. And each party must have something of value to exchange. That could be money in the case of the traditional way of thinking about things. How many of y'all, without asking anything personal, don't raise your hand if you don't want to. I don't want to get into a whole shtick here. How many of you volunteer at your church to help out? Okay? You're giving them something of value, your time. They're getting something of value for you, whatever service you're providing for them. That could also be considered, in this domain, a marketing exchange. So we're trying to discover and satisfy consumer needs, wants, and desires. But what do people want? In order to satisfy the needs, wants, and desires of consumers, add a profit through an integrated effort of the firm, we need to understand what people want. And you might say, that's easy, just ask them. Nah, that doesn't always work out so well. People may not actually know what they want, or they may not be able to tell you what they want. Who's old enough to remember a Discman? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? A Discman? What was a Discman? What was it? It played CDs, and a big thing you carried around with a nice strap, and you could carry it around. Your music was portable. Holy mackerel. Were there any problems with that device? What was one? It would skip. It's bouncing around. It was skipping. So if I said to you, do you have a Walkman then? And you say, well, you would say then, yeah. And I say, well, what would you like? What would you like? And you just say, I'd like one that didn't skip. Or you know what? This one's pretty big and bulky. Could you make it smaller? Or you might say, where's my fashion students again? You might say, well, can you make it with a fashion cover that I could exchange? Right? That's the sort of thing you might say. Would you have said to me in the day, what I'd really like to do is have a small device that I could download a few thousand songs on to and play with quality for free, more or less. You would not have said that because you wouldn't have thought of it. It's not a thing. And so consumers can't necessarily tell you what they want. Why not? Well, it's really hard to see the future and how unknown products would work for them. So they stick with the existing thing. I'd like one that didn't skip. I'd like one that's smaller. I'd like one that was more fashionable. How many people kept using a Walkman after smart devices came out? They would play things on this, on the MP3 players or on phones. Hardly anybody. They just couldn't tell you about that. You had to figure it out. So there's my Walkman example. Oh, there's one with a different color. Oh, there's an MP3 player. Consumer needs come from, of course, human needs. And that's no insult to you. I'm sorry, this is more for consumers, but dogs have needs too. I understand that. So human needs, these are things that are basic to life and society. Your human needs, the need for food, the need for shelter, the need to be safe, the need to be belonged and to be loved. So human needs are basic, yeah? Unless you're one of the rare people called aerists who claim they don't need any food, they exist on air. You need food. How many people need food? Now, you would say, well, that's pretty good. Just market as food. How many people here are vegetarians? They're not eating meat. Only two, three. Wow, usually you get more than that. You're usually a bigger group. So I'm going to introduce you to a really terrific deal on a thick, juicy porterhouse steak. And I'm going to give it to you with a sauce out of this world, inexpensively, to introduce you to the product. Are you interested? But I'll bring it to you. We'll have it delivered to your house, huh? She needs food, but she's not that interested in the food I'm selling, right? There's a basic need for food. She doesn't want meat. How many of you guys are meat eaters? How many of you guys eat, of the meat eaters, how many of you guys eat beef, pork, lamb? Sorry to say this next one. Dog? What? You do know that in parts of the world, dog is a perfectly legitimate source of meat. Yes? Snake? Oh, you eat snake. Okay. Happy. Yes. I know. We're just playing with you. So, somebody have a snake back here? What's going on? So, what's the point? We all need food, but we all don't need the same food. You have to understand what your consumers want. So consumer wants are ways to satisfy those needs in ways that are shaped by the environment, by culture, snake okay, not okay, dog okay, not okay, and your personality. I just don't want meat, thanks. I want veggie. You may want a burger, But how about having a desire, if you're a meat eater, for an A5 Kobe steak? So I need food. I want a burger. But I would really like to have a Kobe steak. So desires have strong emotional elements. You might desire an A5 Kobe steak. It is $200 for a 6-ounce cut. How many of you guys even know Kobe steaks? Has anybody ever had a Kobe steak? You have. Nice. We'll have to talk to you later on about how much you enjoy that or not. So anyway, in any event, you have these needs, you have these wants, you have the desires. Desires are things that have an emotional attachment. Man, you're going for that. And we have to understand what your consumers want, yeah? I forget where this clerk takes me. Maybe it's just to a steak. This is just somebody who's so excited about the product they blog about steaks. So what is a market? Since we're talking about marketing, what is a market? A market is a set of all actual and potential buyers of a product. Are you a potential buyer of Google? No, so you're not really in the market, not that they're selling Google today. Are you a potential buyer anytime soon, reasonable, of a Maserati? No. How many, any car buffs here that would like a Maserati? Are you in the market for one soon? I should not waste my time delivering thick product brochures and videos to you. You're not really in the market for it. I tell this story because I don't know what I was browsing or what I clicked on one day. For a while I was getting at my house, I don't want people to think professors earn brochures for yachts. I'm not in the market for yachts. Thank you, you're wasting your, I'm not part of your market. I'm not a actual or potential buyer. So what does this imply? Well, I say it implies MAD, M-A-D. It implies that you have purchasing power or money. I don't have money for a yacht. You don't have money for a Maserati or to buy Google. You are not really in the market. It also, though, implies, all right, something of value to exchange. I'm emphasizing money. It could be time for something else. Authority is the A of MAD. You need to have the ability, the authority to exchange with something. Can you think of a product that people might have the money to buy, but they don't have the authority to buy? Yeah. A NASA rocket? Okay, I'm thinking something more realistic, but you, yeah, yeah. White House? Does that have an extra meaning for me? The White House? A White House. Help me out. Oh, the White House. Okay, well, sort of like NASA rocket. Okay, I'm surprised that you're interested in buying it, but okay. How about something more? Yeah. Liquor is quicker. So how many of you guys are too young to buy liquor? Okay, so we shouldn't be selling liquor to you because you don't have the, even if you have the desire, you don't have the authority to buy it. So we have to be aware of, does somebody have the ability? In the classroom, we're talking about liquor and age. But what about in a business environment where you're talking to a purchasing agent or to an engineer, and you're getting them all ramped up and excited, and they want it, but they don't have the authority to buy? Seems like you waste a lot of time and energy getting them excited about this thing. Do the people have authority to buy? If not, they're not in your market. And finally, a demand, the willingness to purchase, the desire to engage in exchange. The lady up here has the power to buy a steak. She has the authority to buy the steak. And no matter what I do, she's not buying the steak. Why not? She doesn't have any demand for it. I'm wasting my time. Does your target market, your audience, have the desire for your product? If not, they really aren't part of your audience, not really part of your target market. Marketing seeks then to discover and satisfy the needs, wants, and desires of consumers through research and a marketing program. So we look out to the marketplace, and we find people that fit this definition of MAD, money, authority, and demand. They have needs, wants, and desires that our organization might be able to fulfill, given who we are. So we get information back through marketing research, which we'll talk about those needs, wants, and desires in the market. Having discovered their needs, wants, and desires, we then are in a situation to develop concepts within our organization, new product ideas to see if they'll work. And if one of them seems to work out, then we satisfy a consumer's needs by designing a marketing program that has the right combination of the product with its features at the right price. They have to be able to afford whatever it is you're building. They have to hear about it, know about it, so you have to be able to promote it to them, and you have to get it to them. Your product has to be in the right place. So we'll talk more about these four P's of the marketing next. If this works out well, we roll out goods and services and ideas to the consumer, and if things go really well, we get sales and profit. That's the cycle that we're looking at. We cannot be all things to all people. So we have to focus our marketing needs on one or more specific groups of consumers. Those are people we call our target market. Backing up to our meat eater example, how many of you could afford, even if you wanted, a Kobe steak at $200 for a 6-ounce pop? How many could afford it? How many would want it at $200 for a 6-ounce pop? Okay, so probably I shouldn't be trying to sell all of you my Kobe steak experience. How many of you guys that are meat eaters could have a nice juicy burger? Okay, so your guys I might focus on, except for the few people who are vegetarians. I'm wasting my time with them. Who's your target audience? Do people still drink cola? How many of you guys are still cola drinkers of one kind or another? So how many people drink some version of Pepsi? How many people drink some version of Coke? Holy mackerel. And of Coke, how many of you like one particular type of Coke? You either like diet, or you like classic, or you like flavored. Okay, so what we would say is, we would not be happy with just one Coke. People want different things from us. We got our Coca-Cola Classic, we got our Coke Zero, we got our Diet Coke, we got our Diet Cherry Coke, we got our Starlight, is that still out there? That was an idea they came up with, Starlight Coke, Lime Coke, Coca-Cola Black, which was a failed product we'll talk about later. But they try to appeal to different segments of the marketplace, different target audiences who have different needs, wants, and desires, because people don't just want Coke. And if that's all you offer them, they probably look for another product that satisfies their need for zero calories or their need for flavor. In the old days, we had magazines that were very generic. Is that still there? Very generic. So Life magazine, you've heard of Life or Look? General interest magazine, sports and news and technology all together in a single magazine. You couldn't make that work today. First of all, people aren't reading magazines, but people want areas of their interest. They want a magazine for female executives who are runners, something very specialized to them. So it's the marketing mix that represents the tools that marketers have to satisfy consumers' needs, wants, and desires. The marketing mix here at Kent and many places, not everywhere in the world, consists of four P's. The product or service or idea that you're selling. The price that you're selling it at. The promotion that you're using to communicate the ideas to the consumer. And the place, the way in which you get that product out to the consumer. So product, price, place, promotion are the four P's of the marketing mix that marketers use in their toolkit to try to satisfy all those needs, wants, and desires out there. Often it's shown as a circle, and at the center of the circle on purpose is what? As you can read it, the consumer. All of this effort doesn't work if you don't have the consumer in mind, because you build something they don't want any part of. Whoops, we did a really great job, except nobody wants it. It's the consumer at the center of our efforts. So here we see product, price, place, promotion, focusing on the consumer. And so it's an integrated plan of action with the consumer as the focus. And we have to constantly remind ourselves of that. It's not your idea. It's what they want that you can provide. Most of a farm's marketing efforts involve the design and implementation and the evaluation of those four P's of the marketing mix. So that's mostly what we're doing within our organization. Now, I mentioned earlier, there are a whole bunch of external factors outside the organization that impact us that we can't control. Rats, it'd be nice if we could control everything. But we have to be aware of them, and we have to think about how they influence our consumer and what it means for our marketing mix. So here you see the factors I'm going to talk about, which I mentioned earlier. Competition. If you just create something that consumers like and stand still, good luck with that. Consumers are looking for new flavors, new sizes, new features, new attributes. Competition will be happy to take your consumers over and earn money on them because you weren't satisfying them. What's competition doing? Regulatory, legal, and political factors. Do you know where the biggest McDonald's in the world was until just recently? Orlando? Somewhere else even bigger? You got it? Dubai? Sometimes I can be wrong with my data. My information was the biggest one in the world, although Dubai sounds pragmatic, was Moscow. I heard that. Let's assume it's true. Muscovites love their McDonald's. How's business today at the Moscow McDonald's? Close. Why would they close such a successful business? There's a war going on where Russia is aggressing against what country? The Ukraine. And so we've said due to political, legal, regulatory factors, but in this case political, we're shutting down our business. We don't control that. We don't even want to shut it down, but we're not going to stay in business in this situation. Technology, well, CRE, I should go to economic situation. So what's going on with the economy? Well, it's really hard to read what's going on with the economy. What's one thing that's going on with our economy in general? So inflation implies what? Prices are going up. Are all prices going up the same amount and equally across it? No, gasoline is up and housing is up, but eggs have stopped inflating so fast. But what's it mean for your industry, for your consumers as those prices go up? How are they going to react? Who are your consumers? Are they the top 1%? They probably don't care much about your inflation problem. Are they middle class workers? That target audience might be more concerned about what's happening there. Or is there a recession coming or not coming? We don't know. We're still trying to figure it out. What will it mean for your consumers? Economic technology, well, we just gave the example of Coca-Cola focusing on AI, but there's lots of other sorts of technology issues for our consumers and what it means for us, and all those social changes. What is impacting our consumers that would impact our company and our marketing mix? So CREST, CREST factors, are factors that we in marketing have to pay attention to and ask what do they mean for our consumers. So we are trying to provide satisfaction. How do we do that? We do that by providing the consumer with value. Customer value is the unique combination of benefits that our targeted buyers receive. Include things like the quality of the product. Every product has some quality. What quality do your consumers want? So somebody's eating Kobe beef one time. Has anybody been to, anybody go periodically to a really good steakhouse? Anybody like that? Okay. You go to a really good steakhouse, you have your steak, is it good? Presumably, it's good. It's a good steak. Do you also go ever to McDonald's or Burger King? And what you get there, is it good for what it is? It's good. Are they the same quality level? They're not. Well, how can that be? You really like your steak, how can you like your burger? Because different things offer us different levels of quality that we expect, that we come to know. We're good with it. We would not be good if they served us a big Whopper at our steakhouse. So some level of quality, convenience, on-time delivery, especially in business, but more and more as you get stuff on time online, and both before sale and after sale service at a specific price, that's what gives us value. And do you pay more for that steak at the steakhouse than you do the burger? You do. How can you be happy with that? It's the price I expect for the quality I'm getting is the thing that makes sense. Value marketing is a consumer-centric marketing approach. It centers on strategies that try to exceed that target audience, that client's expectation, and fuel consumer loyalty to achieve customer success. At its best, value marketing turns consumers into fans that help promote products and services with their positive reviews. That's positive reviews, I guess. So let's think about how we might create value. This is one of our video guest lectures, Tim Appel at AAA Mobile Home out towards Ravenna. Let's see if we hear from him, okay? We are not. Let me try it this way. Sometimes these things work fine. Sometimes technology likes to fight me just to be amusing. Let's try it first this way. No? Okay, Tim, can we? You're loading. I can see you're loading. Will you work now?
You know, I mean, a home is a home is a home. A mobile home, there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of them for sale by owner. But what differentiates us, what I feel is our core is our service, because I go in and I go through the homes, I test the homes, and I'll fix things. For example, if there's a spot of mold or something, I don't just paint over it. I cut it out, remove it. I mean, we make the homes right. You know, I thrive and survive on referrals. I've sold homes to families 4 times. And so I don't cover up a defect. We make sure that, you know, we treat every home as though my own family member was going to move into it. And they don't really see that when they move in initially, but they also don't have problems later on. You know, anything I find, I go through the homes, I fix it. And, you know, we charge a little bit more for that. But in the end, they're getting a home that they're going to be safe and happy with. So really, I feel that it's more service than just selling houses. I want to make, these people are moving into our parks, the ones that we own the park, and we want a happy resident. I want referrals. So, you know, basically, I just want to make sure that they're getting more than they're paying for.
So terrific. Here's a particular...
You know, I mean, a home is a home is a home. A mobile home,
says,
there's...
Look, we create value. We're selling a home, a product, through our service in addition to our product. And we do that by doing this service right for our consumers. And what happens? We get satisfied consumers. They aren't unhappy. And they give us repeat business, and they give us referrals. And the trick here is, if you can provide consumers with the perception that they're getting more than they paid for, you're delighting them. You're going beyond satisfying them. What can you do in your business to make them feel that way? Across many industries, we've seen that the retailers that grow customer service ratings the fastest have the greater sales growth. For example, in many situations, prices have come down dramatically on electronics items. At the same time, the complexity of the products has increased. So expert advice as a service is more important than ever. And of course, what company found that to be true and provides expert advice with the purchase of their electronics? Apple through the Apple Store. Anything else come to mind? Which one? Android. Okay. Doesn't leap to my mind. Best Buy is the one that leaps to my mind. And how do they provide that expert advice? Through their salespeople and their geek squad. Yeah? Anybody old enough to remember Circuit City? Yeah? Circuit City, a big, vast array of product. Go try to find some help there. They never learned to provide consumers with service, let alone expert services, a separate sort of value. Circuit City no more. Best Buy fighting against online purchasing, but Best Buy's still here. They learned that lesson. Apple does it well with the... with their stores and their expert advice as well. What are some value strategies that you might think about doing? Well, the best price. So this would be a good value strategy that provides economic value. In general, when you think out across the world, who makes a pretty good living selling things on the best price? Amazon one, who else? Walmart would be another one. Doing a pretty good job at, quote, good value. So Walmart, everyday low prices. Amazon, e-commerce giant with competitive pricing. Aldi, do you guys know the Aldi grocery store chain? Aldi, discount groceries. Costco. Costco members? Nobody? One, two, three. Costco membership warehouse club with discounted prices. JetBlue or Spirit, low price air travel. So here is a set of companies who say, how are we providing value? What sort of value? We're providing the best price as a strategy, okay? But that's not the only way to go. You could also provide value by providing this product. You could go with a premium value strategy, giving the consumer that functional value of the product. Apple, their products aren't cheap, which I think you know. How many people are buying Apple phones? You can get cheaper phones. I'll show you my Android sometime. No, I'm not buying that. Apple phones, Rolex, you know, as a luxury brand, right? BMW for performance, luxury, and advanced technology. Louis Vuitton, a fashion luxury brand. Whole Foods Market sells high quality, natural, and organic products, providing the best product as their value strategy. Why don't you just buy it at Walmart? I'm better than Walmart. I don't want it at Walmart. I want it at Whole Foods. Best service, another value strategy. Companies prioritize customer satisfaction and personalized experiences and exceptional support. Ritz-Carlton hotels, you could stay at a Motel 8, but you aren't getting the same service. Zappos, an online shoe and clothing retailer that has built its reputation on outstanding customer service. Again, we had at least one Zappos purchaser user here. Nordstrom, how many people like Nordstrom? Yeah, no? Last time we actually had a Nordstrom salesperson in the room. So my wife is a Nordstrom sort of shopper. I'm more of a Kohl's shopper. We have different things we look for in our value, but she likes the department store chain that places a strong emphasis on customer service. She gets personal calls from salespeople when new products come in that she might like. I don't need to hear from a salesperson about new products. Thanks, don't call me, but she likes that. She gets a little handwritten note about the wonderful purse that she bought or whatever. I don't need that. She does. Chick-fil-A, a fast food restaurant chain that differentiates itself through its friendly and efficient service, a different value strategy. So there are lots of ways to provide value to your consumers. What's best? Well, there's no one answer to that. It depends on your firm's mission, which drives marketing, your firm's objectives, your competitive situation, what the competition is doing, your environment, those crest factors beyond composition, and of course your target audience, your customers. What do they want? Do they want good service? Do they want best product? Do they want low price? What do they want? I don't know. You got to know. So there's different ways to provide value. This is an example from a while ago. We all know Campbell's, Doug Conant, President and CEO at Campbell's, at the time I put this together, the next time I looked at it was Mark Klaus, that a similar strategy for Campbell said, we got to reverse the decline in market value for our company. And the way we're going to do that is to stress products that rank number one or number two in the key categories of simple meals, baked snacks, veggie-based drinks. And what we would do is drop all non-core products from our mix. Anybody know Godiva chocolates? Godiva chocolates, is that a good chocolate? You bet it is. Why would a company drop it? Because it doesn't fit in with what our mission is, what our objectives are right now. And so they dropped anything that wasn't number one or number two in the key categories of simple meals, baked snacks, and veggie baked goods. They focused on healthier for soups, V8 drinks, Pepper Schwamm snacks. They pushed creating products that scream value, nutrition, and convenience. And Doug said, there are four musts for consumer products of this type. Value, what we're talking about. Wellness, quality, and convenience. And they turned that market drop down with the company, at least at the time this was in effect. Value is what your consumers want. This is Fred Hunt, if he would come up for me, talking about delivering value to the customers over
the this notion of value.
See if I can bring them up this way.
This notion of value with a product is for the marketer the game. And I don't, there's no other way to put it. You know, you are in competition day in and day out with those who are trying to figure out a way to better sell their product and to better convince the consumer that theirs delivers on the promise. So when you talk about a commodity-based business, and almost most businesses are that way. They're at a point where the markets are relatively mature, and the product and what you can get for that are very similar. You can look at telephones. You can look at music players. You can look at appliances. In many cases, the chassis looks the same, and the buttons may look a little bit different, but in general, there is a lot of similarity in what they're offering. The difference is that the promise of who that brand is, what it's delivering to you, whether that be quality, whether that be in the case of my product lines, superior chip-to-wall consistency, meaning you pick up that chip off of the color selector at the store, and you put it next to the wall that you paint, and it is exactly that same color. It is going back, a year later and getting that same color and the consistency being such that you can't tell the difference between those two walls that were painted. It is superior color selection. It is the feeling that you are getting the absolute best. It's one coat coverage. It's not having to do this two or three times because, my gosh, painting in and of itself is not the funnest activity. Some people like it. It's cathartic. But most cases, they want to get done. They want to get it done once, and they want to get it done right. So the promise is very much, delivery of that promise is very important.
So in his product category, he finds ways to deliver value to his customers. It is the game. It's the way to beat competition. You're giving them more value than the competition is. Yeah, products might be commodities. They might be similar, but quality, consistency, reliability, selection, being the best is the value that he delivers. It helps you to get it done right, and it delivers on the promise. When you promise a consumer a benefit, it's important that you deliver. Sometimes marketers forget that. They make the promise. They don't do the delivery. They aren't providing the value. And we can provide value in a different way, through deals.
At Domino's, we're tipping you $3 for ordering carryout online. Because we appreciate those heroes who rise. And go get it. Heroes who boldly leave the coziness of their couch in pursuit of hot, delicious Domino's. You too can be a carry-out hero.
You're late.
Barely.
And get a $3 tip to use on next week's order at Domino's.
Not focused on the best or on the quick service that they're delivering. They're going to tip you as a value, $3, to deliver to pick up the product yourself. So a different way to get to
at
value. Relationships and marketing is a key thing for many businesses today. Relationship marketing links the organization to its individual consumers, sure, but also to its employees. We market internally to satisfy the needs, wants, desires of our employees, our suppliers, and our other partners for their mutual long-term benefits. For example, our friends over at Lowe's, any Lowe's lovers? Lowe's? Home Depot? Corporate Lowe's says, our responsibility is a cornerstone of our company, our environment stewardship program, strategic giving money away, and focus on workplace inclusivity fuels our ability to serve the communities around us. We're stewards for the greater good. We frame our future through sustainable sourcing, product safety, helping customers live greener. We also focus on our associates. As part of what we do, we invest in our communities. So they have relationships with the communities, their employees, their consumers.
How we create value for our customers, we look at it several different ways. First off, we're a resource in many, many ways. We're a fairly non-traditional firm, so we don't stay in a certain bucket of just public relations or marketing or advertising. We have vast experience in promotional product and special event, so our resources in that area go very deep. We're also, as a small business, working oftentimes with small to medium-sized business, we become a trusted advisor. Oftentimes the questions that they ask us or the advice that they ask us isn't necessarily related to specifically a public relations or marketing tactic. And then simply just being there for our clients, kind of going beyond the typical 9 to 5 if they're having a special event. Even if the special event starts at 10 and runs till 2 in the morning, as one time a special bank promotion did, we were there. So simply being there for our clients is something that we give what we feel tremendous value, a little bit more than they may bargain for when they sign on with us.
So whether we're talking about B2C, business to consumers, which has been our focus so far, or B2B, providing that value is the way to survive, is the way to have loyal customers. And delighting them is a good way to get satisfaction. You were there for me when I was needed you at 2 in the morning? Dog, thank you. I'm not likely to switch consulting firms very quickly. Over time, marketing's been around a long time. The approaches to marketing has varied, have changed. So we have different marketing philosophies that we talk about. There's been an evolution, but as with many times in evolution, some things still stick around. So we talk about the different marketing management philosophies and their evolution, so a bit of terminology here. And we can start with the idea of production focus, a production philosophy of marketing. The production philosophy assumes that consumers want products that are available and highly affordable. That's the focus. It comes, we got to go all the way back to the Industrial Revolution. I don't know if we have any history buffs here, but before we had the Industrial Revolution, everything was made homespun in small shops, in a blacksmith store, or sewn up in a small group of people. They weren't there timely. They weren't that cheap, and they weren't that available. So the production philosophy, especially as we came along with the Industrial Revolution, said people want things that are available and highly affordable. So we need to focus as managers, not on the consumers, but on production, improving production and distribution efficiency to make products more affordable and more available. And of course, this is useful when you have a demand that exceeds your supply. People are clamoring for it. You don't have to focus on the people. You got to focus on the product, getting it available out there. And when your product cost is too high. Anybody in operations management? It was meets right before this. Anybody have operations management already? So, a tenet of management and general operations management, in particular production, is long production runs drive your costs down. So if you want to drive your costs down so you can reduce your prices, you want to focus on long production runs. And the classic example of this, of course, maybe came to your mind already, was Henry Ford. In the early Model T. And what was the famous saying about Henry Ford? Do you recall the saying? Do you know the saying? What did he say about getting the Model T? Too old for you? You could get the Model T in any color you wanted as long as that color was black. Why? They weren't stopping the production line to make it green and blue and yellow and convertible and hardtop and four doors and two doors. In the day, he created a production line that created black Model Ts faster than anybody else could and drove costs down so low, this is an amazing thing at the time, that his own workers could afford a car. Wow. Did it work for him? Yeah. And could it work for some companies today? Yeah. So that's one philosophy. Now, this does assume that consumers want the product, available. Product philosophy, this is somewhat different than the textbook. Take a note in case it comes up on a test. The product philosophy assumes that consumers want products that offer the most quality and the most performance and the most features, and it implies that the firm should make continuous improvements. Again, the focus here is on the product, not on the consumer. What very popular product might leap to your mind that might have this focus? Constantly coming up with new additions, with new features, with new whatevers? Nada? Yeah, Apple is often criticized for focusing more on the product than on what you necessarily need, want, or desire. They still sell a lot of product, but you aren't really their focus in many cases. In fact, they just lost that lawsuit where they were slowing down your battery on older models. That's not really consumer-focused. This is a classic old one. It's amusing to me. Showing a focus on the product. So this was back in the day when most calculators were still big clunky things on a, anybody ever seen an old calculator on a desk, a big clunky one? Manual was even worse, but you had electronic ones, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. New ideas, small ones. They first came out with four function calculators. Then they got fancy. And then they said, man, let's get even fancier. At Casio, miracles never cease. There was a time when neither one of us knew what a melody was, but Casio ML90 musical calculator has changed all that. With 13 pre-programmed tunes, we can now make beautiful music with the best of them. We can hear Happy Birthday to You, but this was not MP3 quality play. This was beep, 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 beep. You know what I'm doing? Do you really think there was a massive demand for that in a calculator? No. Why do it? Some engineer somewhere said, hey, we can do that. Let's do it. Focusing on the product, people, not on what consumers want. Nah, that's not around anymore. Microsoft more recently ditched a new product, the Snapchat-like highlights feature from Skype. It was focused on the product, not on the consumer. A while ago, we explored some design changes. We heard from customers that we overcomplicated some of our core scenarios, says the director of design for Skype. Calling became harder to execute, which is the key thing you want to do on Skype. And highlights didn't resonate with the majority of users. We are focused on the product. Ooh, what can we add to this thing without checking in with the consumers? Not the best way to go. Sales philosophy. It assumes consumers will not buy enough product unless there's a strong sales and promotion effort. This is why I don't like when people say we gotta push the product on a consumer. That's this philosophy. It is useful in some situations. Unsought goods. Things that people are just not looking to buy. How many of you guys have life insurance? You all know you're going to die, right? You're going to need life insurance. You figured that out? Yeah, but I'm not out shopping for life insurance right now, right? So sometimes life insurance sales can be a little pushy. It also works in industries that have overcapacity, who have to sell what they make rather than focus on making what the market wants. So they just have to fill up their, they just have too much of the stuff and they have to sell what they got. And so that can be a sales philosophy. I'm gonna be excited to tell you about the marketing concept philosophy, and it's an odd place to break you, but it's gonna be where your first mini test ends, but it's 2 minutes to 5. I'm gonna save that for me for next week. So I will send you an email telling you where this ends, here and in the book. And boo, we'll do our first mini test. Thanks for being here. Thanks, Webbies. Bye.